Welcome to Bruin Source. This is Ed.
And this is Isaiah.
We got Isaiah back for a second week. Lot to talk about. Before we get into it, apologies for my voice. I'm a little under the weather, so if I sound a little scratchy or if I cough a little, sorry about that. Hopefully it will not impact the conversation too much. But yeah, lots to talk about. Spring game happened this past Saturday. We got some transfer stuff on the football front. We got basketball transfers, two more commits that we'll talk about, one outgoing transfer, and then some spring sports, including softball. Let me ask you this. Let's start with the spring game. And was it actually on TV?
No. Yeah, let's go back. I made kind of a, you know, if anyone's hip-hop fans today, there was a diss track that landed. And I feel like I actually dropped a diss on the Pac-12 network last week. And everything that was said in that diss track today in regards of hate is how I felt towards the Pac-12 network. But it turned out that they actually heard me, or they felt it. And there was it was on Pac-12 LA, I believe, which was a little bit tough for those. You know, obviously they have their tiered program where you can get just Pac-12 network, and then others can get the more regional program channels. So yeah, it was on TV. I didn't get to catch it. I went on the app. I wasn't able to locate it, and I just went back on with life and figured I'll hear notes from you. So it was kind of on TV. That is that. I was shitting on the Pac-12 for not having it on TV. They really didn't, just because they're inept. And they're about to cease to exist. And they actually, that has not had any effect on their ineptness. They just are the Pac-12 as we know them. Our very crown jewel of the, our swan song of this whole thing that has taken place. But yeah, that was a long-winded way to say that it was on TV. It just wasn't on my TV.
Are you calling the Pac-12 network the J. Cole of the situation, where they kind of backtracked and apologized and said, "We're so sorry. Please leave us out of this. Here it is on TV."
And then all of a sudden, they still just get strays. Like, no one, everyone is still resenting them. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They're just kind of...
Well, you heard it here first, I guess. The Pac-12 is the J. Cole of this beef between Isaiah and Pac-12. I don't even know if we can call this a beef. I feel like it's...
No, I'm destroying them. It's a murder.
I mean, you're like kicking a dying patient already, you know? It's not a fair fight.
I hate the way that they show games. that's
well, I mean, we all did. Let's be honest. It's long overdue at this point. So you were not able to watch it, which is unfortunate.
Right.
Well, I did. I did get to go to it, just as a result of living much closer to the Rose Bowl than you do, obviously. And it was a good event. I had a good time. It was nice, first of all, just being back at the Rose Bowl. A lot of energy. There was, you know, a lot of like pregame stuff going on. We got there a little late, so we didn't catch all of that, but a lot of kids, a lot of families out. There was obviously a lot of excitement. It felt like there was a good buzz in the air. So from an event perspective, you know, good job on the school and Foster for getting that all kind of organized around the Rose Bowl. Kudos to them to bring it back. It was a lovely day, obviously, in the Rose Bowl, you know, 75 degrees and sunny. We were all on the shady side of the stadium, so no issues there. And it was great to see some energy and passion on the field. If you don't know what the spring showcase has been, it's never like a full spring game. So we've never had like a blue versus white type of setup. But there were 12 periods of different, you know, drills and practices and things that the team did. So the first kind of period was basically like D linemen and O linemen like one-on-one wrestling, or I think there was some linebackers thrown in there as well, which was kind of fun to watch. There was a lot of hooting, hollering, like the team was into it, the coaches were into it. And I think that's going to be a theme you're going to hear kind of throughout this segment about the spring game, is how enthusiastic and how energetic the coaching staff was kind of throughout the whole thing. You know, then they had some periods where it was, you know, receiver versus DB with the quarterback throwing. Those were a lot of fun. I think it was good to see, you know, Ethan Garbers make some connections there. It was good to see some receivers actually, you know, create separation and catch the ball. I think one thing that was very clear throughout this whole experience, through the whole kind of showcase, was we have some very good receivers this year, and I think they're going to flash on the field. And then we had some periods where there was, you know, full kind of 11-on-11 scrimmage type situations where they ran plays. And I think that was where it was a little clear. Offense is gonna need some help, I think. There's gonna take some time for it to gel. But there was a lot of glimmers of hope there. I think one guy that really flashed, Titus, I can never say his last name.
We'll say TMA. Yeah.
TMA. Titus, TMA, he really, really showed out. I think he showed good hands, good separation, you know, solid speed. He kind of was the full package there. The other guy that I was actually really surprised to see flash as well is Rico Flores. And we heard about him kind of throughout spring, but, you know, he's a big guy and he can go up and get it. And very, very strong hands. He made some good contested catches. So good to see that. And I was encouraged by, you know, Garbers actually making some good throws and looking a little bit more comfortable in the offense. Wasn't perfect by any means. I think there's still going to be a lot of work to be done, but, you know, signs are pointing up on that front. Now, I'm not saying to the point where, yeah, we're going to be a really good offense or anything, but I think that we will be getting competent by the time, you know, the season starts. So a lot of positivity on that side of things.
I would like
coaching staff. Yeah,
go ahead. Before we go on to the coaching staff, I want to point out, because I want to touch on a few things you mentioned. So first was the social media presence, what was going on, even though I wasn't able to watch the game on the Pac-12 network, it was great. I think that we were able to see that the Bruin walk had happened. It looked like there was a lot of people, enough to make an impact, right? We have to remember this is a spring game, and Rose Bowl is always a trek, and everyone who's done it once knows how much of a commitment it is to that day, which someone like Zed, which is part of his insanity, is willing to do, and he's kind of mastered it. But so that was cool to see, and to your point, just like it's refreshing from an arm's length, maybe across the country, to see that Foster has just continued to deliver. The one thing is, like, yeah, we're going to have these events on paper, but it seems to be, I know some people groan that we didn't have a game, but it seems to be that Friday Night Lights, like, everything is still trending up. And so that was exciting to see, to set up from the point of view over here, who aren't in LA. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about before you get to the coaching staff is that when I hear what you say about the players, if we remember, Titus had some great catches in the Sun Bowl in 2023. Was it 2023 or 2022? I know it was a 2022 season, but was a game. Anyways, the point is, it was part of 2022.
Might have been 22 still.
Yeah. I think it was in December 2022. But yeah. So, but he had some great catches, and I know a lot of us had high expectations for him to take the leap this past year, and that was derailed for certain reasons. I mean, many of us think it's because of Chip's preferences for slot receivers and walk-ons, and which is, again, just I think I want to avoid speaking about the coach that shall not be named.
We've moved past him. He's someone else's problem.
Right. He's gonna be in the background, you know, moving forward for the first year or two. But anyways, because the players are here. But then to hear Garbers, I think I remember when he was getting recruited and he committed to Washington that he was such a great high school quarterback in the sense that he had great touch. And so that not to be realized just yet, and we've seen flashes of it, and especially lately in the LA Bowl, we saw, especially at second half, to see Garbers really be who he is. If we can have that consistently this season, if Eric Bieniemy, so I'm going to let you go to the coaches, can do that, oh, we're in business, because that's the Ethan Garbers that was supposed to translate from. He was such a gamer in high school, who had confidence, and he just hasn't reached that yet in college, but it was something that they were looking forward to in Washington, and then when we grabbed him, we were looking for him to take the mantle from DTR. Not necessarily the arm that DTR has. DTR has one of the strongest arms that we've probably seen come across his campus, and it was an issue at times, but Garbers had a touch to the ball on the other side and just needed to get his arm stronger. So positive developments to hear there in notes on that end.
Well, you speak on that touch, and you mentioned Bieniemy. I think we saw some of that playbook kind of unfold in this game or this event a little bit. There were a number of plays on the offensive set that he ran that he ran kind of receivers on these out routes that we've seen with the Chiefs offense for a number of years, where it does take some touch to get that ball out and accurately to the receiver. And we saw that successfully happen with TMA, with Rico a couple times, and it's really encouraging to see Bieniemy actually, you know, take advantage of that, be able to recognize he does have the ability to make those types of throws. He might not be, you know, bombing the ball down the field, but he can make those types of throws, right? He has some accuracy there. So that was actually really good to see, and an encouraging sign that Bieniemy is actually looking at the personnel and adjusting and building an offense around what he has. The other thing I saw that I actually really liked that we did a couple of times was actually roll the quarterback out. You know, I think there's probably recognition that the offensive line is not fully gelled and not fully in place yet. That the defensive line obviously knows a lot of the plays by now and is taking advantage of them and breaking through. So let's move the quarterback so they don't get sacked. And obviously this was not live hitting or anything like that, so, you know, Garbers wasn't getting hit. But there were some called sacks in this game that I think the defense would have hit home in a true situation. But, you know, recognizing that, hey, the offensive line is still not as strong as we need it to be, let's roll the quarterback out, buy him some time to make some throws, was good to see. Yeah, I mean, and the fun thing about Bieniemy was this is the first really big kind of publicized event at the Rose Bowl with him there. Obviously, Friday Night Lights happened, but, you know, this was supposed to be kind of the final hurrah of spring, right? And he did not hold back. I mean, you could hear him yelling and screaming and getting into it with players, and honestly, love that kind of energy. Foster himself was in the thick of things every single play. I mean, he was kind of there watching in the middle of the play. He would coach guys up after the play ended, you know, go talk to guys. He was laughing, smiling. We've been saying this, but it was so evident in this situation with so many fans out in the stands and you know, kind of their first big public appearance at the Rose Bowl in this kind of situation, that it was so obvious how personable he is, what a, you know, fan engager he is. He is a guy who seems to be enjoying that aspect of the school and of the football program, and it was super refreshing to have that kind of presence, and I think it got fans energized and more engaged. You know, I think the number that the school officially cited was 11,000 attendees, though I will say they were not checking tickets at the door, so they were letting basically anybody in. So if you did not have a pre-reserved ticket, it didn't matter. So I'm curious to know what the true number actually would be. I think it was probably a little higher. I don't know if we hit that full 20,000 number or not, but You know, the shady side of the Rose Bowl was largely pretty full with a good amount of students, or not students, a good amount of people kind of in the concourses, engaging with some of the activities out there. So, yeah, I mean, the coaching staff, again, just a lot more energy, a lot more enthusiasm. I think that rubs off on the fans. I mean, you can hear people talking about the kind of coaching staff. And sorry, my dog is currently probably barking at the delivery robot that just rolled by our windows. So he really hates those things.
Good for Mookie. Me too. I think to your point, like, it's interesting. You know, I look back at Mick's hire, and let me start off by saying that Foster isn't Mick. Mick came in with I think 11 straight NCAA appearances at Cincinnati. It was 10 or 11. And
just a lot more coaching experience in general.
And to that point, Foster isn't that. We know who he is. He's a position coach. He's done the unusual leap. But he is killing it this offseason. I would give him, if I was giving out grades, I would give him an A- right now. And the only reason why I haven't given him an A is because we haven't necessarily landed a 5-star just to throw on as a bow. But everything he's doing is what we expected for the next coach from UCLA in terms of engaging with the community. And I think, so he's getting, I would give him an A to A+ with the community. And I think it's going to pay dividends come fall, because I was just looking at the schedule, and we're not going over a schedule now, but just to note, we should all consider our first home game. It's not an out of conference. It's not a Hawaii. It's not a Bowling Green. It's Indiana. And granted, Indiana is not that big of an opponent, right? We're not facing a big name brand in terms.
It's not basketball.
It's not basketball. This isn't a basketball matchup, but it's still our Big Ten. And so I do expect a larger non-conference appearance. It's substantially noticeable on TV because of this effort. So I'm excited to see that happen, our first Big Ten home game. Because if we all know that coach who should not be named, if he was still around, which we dread to think about, that game would have been empty. And it would have been such a dire way. So props to Foster. The other flip side, which I know we're going to transition to, is recruiting. Going back to recruiting, it was what happened with the spring game that I was excited to see is that we had taken advantage of the moment, and we had invited not only high schoolers and people around, but we got in key recruits and some that even committed already. And I think especially getting some guys on the line, we had already gotten a guy from UNLV. And we spoke about him in the last episode, but just to continue on that and get the guy from Houston and another tackle.
And Nijay.
And then I think we get Pierce from Arizona State, who isn't necessarily eye-popping in terms of his numbers or his profile, but he's still a big body and he plays tight end. And he is experienced enough to add depth to the position. Well, we do have two solid talented guys at the 1 and 2 spot. But yeah, so we see that happening. So we see the transfer. There's things that he's already doing. And then we also are, I think today I saw on Twitter that we have the DB from a transfer from LSU, but who went to Bishop Gorman in Vegas, Hughes. And so if we lock him down, and then if we go after Wright from USC, a DB, and then there's other DBs that also, like, it seems like Foster is identifying. It feels like he understands what the fans are saying. We're not sitting there and saying, why aren't we recruiting O-lines? He is getting those guys, and he is filling in tactfully, and I think it is, he's setting himself up, and his preparation is showing already that it's going to put him in a good place. Maybe not for year one, but at least as he works out the kinks, and I mean good place. Good places like to be able to compete for a bowl game going into the last weekend, and us playing, you know, Fresno State. But if he's set up for us, he is, you know, I think he's hitting a high marks, and it's cool to see in a transfer recruiting, and then also setting and laying those seeds with the local recruits who are coming in. We have some really good guys coming in, and you can feel the energy shift. Like, when you were there, did you see a large contingent noticeably of like young players that were around? Like, you're like, those are
the young players. There are tons and tons and tons of high school teams. Just not even necessarily on the field. Like, they were just there with their coaches in the stands watching, like, just kind of experiencing the whole thing. And I'm sure a lot of them were invited, and, you know, there were probably a lot of them were underclassmen and we weren't even necessarily recruiting yet or even thinking about. There were some middle school teams that I saw there. So that grassroots kind of making inroads with local teams is clearly a big priority for Foster. He's doing that. It was definitely evident with the people that were there. I mean, you could see them. I mean, there was all sorts of kids walking around in their, you know, high school and middle school football team gear. And so that in and of itself, to your point, is a huge, huge, huge shift based on the last several years. Like, it is something that we've all been calling for, and we're finally seeing it come to fruition. And I think, to your point, it will pay off in the future. And I'm really heartened by the way Foster's handled it so far.
Yeah, the one thing, I don't know why this is probably immaterial to anything, but if Foster can land a Colorado recruit, I just would like that, just because I think there is naturally, the two dudes are black, so they're going to be like, oh, look, Foster's the cool, hip, black coach in LA versus, you know, people. I love Prime. I think he's harsh. I think he has a decisive way of coaching or managing his team. But it would be cool to see if we can connect with those type of players, because they're extremely talented. And, you know, there are players who want to play for a black coach. And if they see Foster as a realistic thing, I think that signals to younger black athletes throughout the country, like, yeah, this is a place for us as well. I think we have to understand that, like, it's important to get the poly community and know certain players, because USC has had traditionally that kind of market on it. So when we get Jay Toa back, when we draft, when Latu is winning, that is great for us, because making inroads and providing an option for those type of players. In the same way, Foster's roster has already been known. It's gone viral amongst Black Twitter.
Foster's roster.
His coaching staff, besides Jerry, is pretty much black. And then Malo. And so that type of stuff, just, it brings this type of thing, this different energy that's not only just, young and fresh, but it's like, oh, it's modern and it represents the players they're playing. It's cool to see UCLA on that, because that's what we've been. We've been the home of Jackie Robinson, Kareem, and Arthur Ashe. Those are the three names we bring about. But, like, to see Foster kind of really lean into that and then also show, like, we're going to be excellent, I can't help but root for the man. But also still Colorado's recruits and be like, yeah, we're doing it over here, but better. So, anyways, that was my little DEI rant. But
I agree with most of what you said. I don't know if I agree with you about Prime, but this is not the time to debate that or the podcast to do that on. I feel like he's grifting for his kids and is gonna bounce as soon as they're gone. But
we'll have that another time. Yeah.
But no, I think you make a valid point, right? Like, he's a coach that can very much identify with players, and these players can identify with him and his experience more so than probably most college football coaches cannot do. And so if he can put a good product on the field, and by good next season, I mean just competitive, and we'll get into that in the future, like what we expect. But if we can just compete and not look inept and, you know, stay in games, I think it's going to be a big successful springboard for him to build off of. But we're jumping a little too far ahead. I think, you know, you talked through some of the transfer portal stuff there. We've addressed a lot of key positions of need. It sounds like we will be addressing some more. The one position, and you talked about O-line, I think we have, you know, brought some quality guys in, and it sounds like we might still be trying to get other guys. Though Bruno Fina did just put his name into the transfer portal today. So we do lose a little bit of depth there, but I think Fina really saw the writing on the wall, and you know, hopefully he lands somewhere where he can be successful in the future. But he'll be leaving the program. But you know, we've addressed O-line to some degree. Sounds like we're trying to really address the cornerback DB situation by bringing in the kid from LSU, trying to go after the potentially the USC kid, and then we have, you know, Pierre coming in from Arizona State to help shore up the tight end position that's very thin. The one thing that I did not hear on this list yet is defensive end. And I think that is still a very key need that we need to try to fill, especially going into the Big Ten, especially with all the losses that we had last season, or after last season, all the guys that we've lost with Latu and the Murphy twins, etc. If we can get one quality defensive end in, one guy that can make some difference at rushing the passer and pressuring quarterbacks, we're cooking with gasoline here. Like we will be in a much better roster situation than we were with the other guy.
Yeah, defensive end, you're completely right, and I omitted that, but we were looking at Jaden Wayne from Miami. It actually turns out he just committed to Washington recently, and I think as of today, and that was him just going back home after being at Miami, and that guy was supposedly talented. Now, if we can get someone to his caliber, again, everyone must note that May 1st, which is coming up this week, the transfer portal closed, but you can keep recruiting after that. So it's not necessarily the end of we can't recruit. That's just a reminder, because I know everything's been changing with transfer portal rules and NIL. So there are guys out there, and it seems like our staff is on the ball to get someone. They recognize it as well, which is a promising sign.
Yeah, I mean, that sentence in and of itself, right? They recognize that we need to fill some gaps is a huge improvement over years past. But yeah, I think the spring has largely been successful. I think we are at a point where we have a much healthier, deeper, and you know, more talented roster than we had when the other guy left. And so let's just keep building on this in fall. Let's keep getting other guys that to fill some of our needs. And hopefully by the time fall camp rolls around, we'll be in a good spot to be somewhat competitive in the Big Ten and not look completely inept.
Yeah, and the players supposedly, reportedly, are going to get the day off on Thursday to conclude spring. So hats off to them. I think that speaks to it's just everything has gone exactly to the filling and honing into that. I think Coach EB has gotten into them enough, and with all the changes and whatnot. So props to them. Great wrap up to spring. Good signs to come in the fall. That gives us a little hope to watch and support this program.
Absolutely. Look, I'm not willing to say we're gonna go in undefeated quite yet, but we're moving in that direction.
Yeah. But speaking of transfers and filling in needs, now switching over to Mo Austin and recognizing that there's a coach that is on fire. I mean, when you talk about someone who has completely decided to wholesale the program, there no prisoners are taken. And when he says we need a three-point shooter, we get one. When he says we need a Bona replacement, we get one. So, yeah, I mean, should we start out with what's going on? We can go in chronological order from the last time we record, but let's talk about our new center/post. I mean, this guy can fly, and we spoke about him on the last episode, but digging into
it. Pre-commitment.
Pre-commitment, and we have landed William Kyle III. Don't forget the three. And I think it's pretty evident when you hear him speak the type of family he comes from. But this guy is just such a high character kid from the Midwest, and it's cool to see him speak highly. I can't speak for you, but I watched the bro interview that they had, and the little exclusive, and you could just see from him, like, he, the moment, everything makes sense when you read about it. He got the call to official visit, and he took it right away. And it makes sense why he was down to Wake Forest and UCLA as outside options out of the region, because it seemed like it fit his character. So character's the first thing. We didn't know about it. You know, he comes from a small school in South Dakota. He was an all-academic player. But when you see him speak, you realize this is a type of Mick Cronin guy that he needs. It reminds you of the Singleton, Kenny, like the ones that are just very come up. And they're very prepared to be team players. They know what the task is at hand. And they seem very articulate in the sense of how they're emotionally able to talk about their position and what their goals are. And so that's cool to see for someone that's this young. And that's always rare with you know, these guys this young. So to get someone like him, I think he actually is going to impact the team. Not just on the floor, but he seems like he has very great off, like, characteristics that remind you of a Miles Johnson and David Singleton.
That's who exactly I was going to say. Is he reminds me of Miles Johnson from his, you know, way he articulates himself with, you know, a lot of thoughtfulness and, you know, like you said, high character kid. I'm hyped for this kid. I think he is a kid that is going to very clearly buy in from day one. And that is obviously incredibly, incredibly, incredibly important for somebody to walk into Mick Cronin's system. As we saw last season, not all guys can successfully or will not successfully buy in until, you know, having to play for a while and kind of get thrown in the fire. I don't think he's going to need to go through that trial. I think he's going to jump right in. Excuse me. That being said, I don't think I'm not expecting him to come in and just be like a Dembona and put that kind of production in on the floor here. There will be growing pains. I think he's going to have to learn and adjust, you know, one, Mick Cronin's system, but also playing at a higher level of basketball, going from, you know, South Dakota State to UCLA in a power conference now. It's not going to be a complete walk in the park here. That being said, he has all the tools to be incredibly successful, plus defender. I mean, the athleticism he possesses is second to none almost. And his motor is insane. I mean, you watch his highlight clips, you watch his, game tape. He's often the one guy running down the floor, like leading the charge as the center. I mean, we saw that with the Dembona plenty last season as well, but this guy seems to take that up a notch. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be really, really, really good in the system, I think. And I think he's going to put in the work to be successful here. And that is the type of guy we needed, and that is the type of guy we got. And Mick Cronin went out and, you know, flexed the UCLA muscles here a little bit. Like you said, Wake Forest was in it. He's a Nebraska local, so a lot of folks thought he might end up at Nebraska. And by all accounts, sounds like Mick Cronin kind of stepped in there and said, now, UCLA is better than all these schools, and you should come here. Pitched him the playing time, pitched him the vision, you know, and landed his guy. And you can't... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, what were you going to say? You can't what? I was going to speak to one more side.
I was just you can't be more efficient than that and more ruthless than that from a recruiting standpoint. I mean, like, there was an outstanding criticism of Mick Cronin for a number of years, even when he was at UCLA. Look, he can't recruit. He can't do this. Can't bring in talent. I think he was severely hamstrung in the last couple of years with this whole NIL thing starting to, you know, evolve and grow and change the landscape. And now that he has that at his disposal, he has the UCLA name and history and heritage. he himself is a willing recruiter and tenacious at it. Now he has NIL that levels the playing field for him. It feels like the combination of those things is now culminating, and now we are flexing our muscles. And this is another proof of that.
And not only is he flexing his muscles, what I was going to say, and I think you did a good lead up to it, was that Mick is reading the room. He's realizing when guys he feels like aren't serious. So last episode we spoke about Cliff and the kind of the comparison between these two. But as of today, Cliff has not committed anywhere. He has taken his final visit to another school, and Mick decided, he was like, you know what, F that, I'm getting my guys and we're going to get to work. So for that to happen was really refreshing to see on that end. It's not just necessarily about locking in on your guys, but it's saying, hey, I'm not going to waste my time with guys who are actually not taken serious. It shows adaptability and also lessons learned on his end. And the transfer portal being the first one is great to see, because then we were able to, you know, the weekend cap was that Dominic Harris, which was rumored and had been tweeting often about, you know, his interest in UCLA. Anytime someone committed, he was supporting it. And I really like the lead up to Dominic Harris's commitment, because I believe 2 days before he had posted a hashtag ad that threw off a lot of people, but it came to find out, and, you know, with a little bit of detective work, not much, but you realize, oh, this is an NIL post for this era. But it's cool to see someone like Dominic Harris, who's now a 3-and-D, drive up the 405 and come to Westwood and see that he's also joining the fray. Because the one thing in his whole thing that he's expressed, yeah, he did go to Gonzaga, but he grew up in Southern California. I think he's from the IE. Zed, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Temecula, yeah, he's a Temecula kid. So he's close to where Zed grew up, and an unfortunate region, but that's besides the point. And
they're very unfortunate.
But Dominic Harris, you know, speaking about the significance of UCLA, all of these transfers, whether they have LA ties, I mean, right now we only have one, right? Just two, actually, because Sky Clark. But Kobe Johnson, who's from Milwaukee, Eric Daly, who's from Florida, and Tyler, who's from Washington, and now that we got William Kyle from Nebraska, and then you have the two home guys who are completely praising, I think, Dominic Harris, to a point in his, at least, his appreciation or his initial interviews express how much the UCLA brand means, makes us feel like we're not crazy in knowing that UCLA is a name brand school, which is it's cool to see that Mick knows it, and he's also treating us like it. He is ruthless right now. We might feel that way, and we'll get over to the guys who are leading, but this is a different era, and we've seen other blue bloods adjust accordingly, and they're taking their lumps as well, but that's how we need to operate. It is a different world. Players are being paid, different expectations. Don't get attached too much outside of the jersey. Have expectations. I know that for some of us, we were sad to see some of the players go, and in the fashion, but it's a brand new world. That doesn't mean, I mean, some of us have our opinions that it's good or bad, more bad than good for some people, more good than bad. And I think things are going to level out, but until then, we have to stay agile is the word. And how Mick has flipped this whole roster and a wholesale, credit to him, because I feel very confident going again into the Big Ten that we are going to not only compete, be contenders and be a top 15 team consistently through next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we talk about Dominic Harris specifically, I totally agree with everything you just said. I think it's been interesting, right, to juxtapose Mick Cronin now recruiting and recruiting over guys when historically he was a guy who was fiercely loyal to his players. And it felt like the guys that we had necessarily never bought in and were considered or consider themselves to be his players. And most of those guys seem to have moved on. And you know, that's no knock against them. This program and system and the way we play basketball is not necessarily for everybody. And that's fine. And I hope, you know, they land on their feet elsewhere. But also, I think Mick Cronin has also shown the ability to retain guys, right, when he wants them here. Like, he was able to hold on to Adembona for an extra season. He was able to hold on to guys like Jalen Clark and Johnny Juzang for an extra season or two when, in the past, even regardless of NIL, a lot of those guys would have jumped, right? How many players, even at UCLA, have we seen that were not ready and would jump way too early? And I think Mick Cronin generally has been very, 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 very successful at keeping those guys in the fold. You know, he's probably had a couple misses. Guys like Amari Bailey maybe should have stayed an extra year. I mean, there are other factors at play there as well. But the point is, he's generally done really well with keeping guys here. And now that you give him NIL, I would imagine he gets even better at that. So, you know, retaining and rosters is obviously very, very important for his system. And so when he has the option to retain guys, and I think he will be very successful at doing that, and when he needs a guy to move on with NIL also, he will be able to adjust and be a little bit more flexible with the roster. So that's all a credit to him. I think he has very, very quickly pivoted and learned based on his mistakes last season. And, you know, we're in a much better spot. Now, Dominic Harris specifically addresses a huge, huge, huge need that we had on this roster last season, and that was three-point shooting. And I think a lot of the guys we've gotten this offseason through the transfer portal address that. But Dominic Harris really represents elite three-point shooting. The guy shot 45% from three last season on a godly amount of attempts. So it's not like he shoots one attempt a game and, you know, hits it. I think he was attempting over six threes a game and hitting 45%. So
that's correct.
So he is a guy that is deadly from three. He's a sharpshooter. I think people are expecting, I've seen a lot of chatter around this online, like, oh, he's going to step in and be the shooting guard. I'm tempering that expectation a little bit. If you dig into some of his advanced stats, you dig into, you know, some of his other even offensive and defensive advanced stats, like, he's a flawed player from that perspective. Like, I don't think we are getting a complete package of a shooting guard out of him. We are getting a three-point specialist who is decently athletic and can play a little defense. But if you look at the advanced stats, like, guys like Sebastian Mack actually were more productive than him, even on offense, in most categories besides, obviously, three-point shooting. So what I see from Dominic Harris is that David Singleton role, where we have a sharpshooter come off the bench when we need, you know, that type of offense and hit threes for us. I really don't think he's going to be starting necessarily, but I think he will get, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes situationally in games. But I do feel like people are overblowing his commitment a little bit. That being said, I think he's a really, really important get for a team that struggled from behind the arc last season. And to add an elite shooter like Dominic Harris is a huge win. And this team, from top to bottom now, you know, minus maybe William Kyle III, everybody can almost consistently stroke threes. Like, they might be streaky shooters, but we have guys who have the ability to stretch you now, kind of from one to four now. And that is a pretty scary thought for what this offense potentially could look like next season.
I hear you. And I think for all of us, we have to recognize, like, it's exciting to think about the combinations that Cronin is going to put out there. And we know Cronin can get tight with his rotations at time, but I'm actually expecting a bit of shuffling at the beginning of the season, and the only position I expect to be a lock is Dylan Andrews. So to your point, like, yeah, I can see Mac starting or Clark or Harris, depending on how they play in the fall camp and who he trusts what's going on. But to that point, I mean, Mac, we have to see how this roster shakes out and who's going to be here in the fall. There's one thing to note that Burke had entered a transfer portal. I know that took a while for me to come to terms with, just given the fact that we all recognize it took him quite a bit of time to get into UCLA and clear admissions, especially with our ridiculous English requirement. And his family looked like they genuinely enjoyed LA if you kept the eye on their socials. And so it is a bit sad on that end, but at the end of the day, he's here for basketball. He didn't come here, I mean, like many of us who are nacho eaters, he didn't go to UCLA for academics and to continue studies. And so whatever's NIL negotiation or whatever happens with playing time, all these things factor into a decision that has to work for both parties. And I'm sure we'll hear more details as time plays out. But Burke is now the latest entry in the transfer portal since we last recorded. And hopefully he is the last. I think we're at 13 again. However,
yeah, our roster math is all complete now.
Yeah, our roster math is complete. But again, with Mick, what he's shown me through some of the players who have left, and to the point that even someone like Burke, who is essentially replaced by someone like by Tyler B, is that he might not be done. So I think he's going to keep everything. He's not taking any chances on this. And if there's a player out there he sees as a better fit and one of his guys that can fill in, I think our towel waivers are going to be better than some mid-major teams. So I'm excited for that. I'm curious to see how the rest of it shakes out, but it's not done yet, fellas, folks. And
not done yet. I don't expect anybody to leave. I feel like this is probably the roster that we're going to go into next season with at this point. I am curious to see, though, now, like, the real hard work begins is fitting these, you know, different pieces together like a puzzle and making this as an effective, coherent team. Obviously, it's Mick Cronin. He will start on defense with that transformation and that molding. But, you know, naturally, I would think this team is just significantly better on offense. But after what we saw last year, we just upgraded our offense basically at every position minus point guard. And Dylan Andrews was probably our best offensive player last season, and there was no issues with him in that regard. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how Mick Cronin, you know, forms this team now with the talent that he has at his disposal. Like you said, I'm hoping to see some more roster and personnel flexibility from Mick Cronin. He's shown flexibility on the recruiting front. He's shown flexibility in how he runs, you know, parts of the program. Now I hope he can get over that hump from an actual X's and O's basketball perspective and actually allow players to make a few more mistakes and reach deep into his bench as needed, because we have, you know, 10 to 12 guys that can play basketball now. And it's not just, you know, guys that are or should that are bench warmers. Like, these are guys that have the talent to be meaningful contributors down the road. And so can we utilize that? Can we use that depth to our advantage? Hopefully we can. Hopefully Mick Cronin does not keep running these tight, like, 6-7-man rotations when we have 4 or 5 other guys just sitting on the bench wasting away. If anything, hopefully last season has kind of opened his eyes to that, and we have options now that we can throw at teams. And not only options, but these are like seasoned players at this point, right? We're not talking about, okay, we need to reach deep into the bench for a freshman who's really not played college basketball. We're reaching deep into the bench with a guy who's played 2-3 years, and that's a big difference. Definitely exciting. Big Ten is going to be a bloodbath, I think, next season. Obviously, we've talked about Illinois and Indiana and Michigan all kind of loading up on recruits as well from the transfer portal, and they've upgraded their talent. So it's gonna be a fun kind of intro to that conference, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. I think Mick Cronin's style and basketball acumen is gonna translate really well to the conference. But yeah, we just have to kind of wait now.
Don't forget Rutgers.
I'm interested to see Rutgers. I think they will be very, very, very young.
Yeah, yeah, and talented. But, no, I am excited. I think, you know, flipping to the other side of basketball, I don't have much more to say about the men's other than what you said, so I'll spare our listeners. But on the other side, we did get a great commitment on the women's team from the player from Wazoo. And do you remember her name? She's the one who hurt herself in the game against us, and she tore
it. I don't out. Know if it's pronounced Leger or Leger.
Let's go with Leger. But Leger's committed, and I think that, yeah, Leger Walker. And I think that's pretty cool to see, but we still need a forward. Other than that, our women's team is returning a lot of talent, and we have some talented players coming in from high school. But it will be interesting to see if we can just get one more forward and then someone that could basically fill in that Osborne spot by the time we play in March, which is hopefully Leger Walker, because she is a top 10 prospect in the transfer portal. Now, the other thing it wouldn't be right not to mention is that USC is loading up as well. So it's just going to be exciting time in LA for women's basketball, with both of these teams going into the Big Ten and seeing how both will be contenders, because both are expected to be top 6 teams respectively, between the both. It depends on where they put us. USC has all the hype, but I really like what we're bringing back and experience we have. So women's team, I mean, I have my personal gripes about closest coaching when it comes to big games, but I'll spare that for now because she does kill it on the recruiting trail, and I'm curious to see how she finishes out this portal cycle.
Yeah, Christine Iwala also transferred out today, so that's another roster spot we can fill, and I think we're at like 12, and we can have 15. So we have some space that we need to account for and fill up. How awesome would it be, you know, post Caitlin Clark now in college basketball? It feels like there's a big gap, right, in terms of like where's the spotlight going to go as the game grows. Obviously, you still have Paige Beckers playing at UConn. You still have a few other folks, other, you know, very talented players that can be stars. But how awesome would it be if UCLA and Southern Cal could kind of pick up that torch as a part of the rivalry and highlight the game? That would be a ton of fun, obviously, with UCLA beating the living hell out of them every game.
And especially Juju, who is now seemed to be the new media darling, along with Paige. But yeah, taking her down. I have, you know what, I agree with you, and I personally, I'm such a big Kiki fan. Again, she's one of those high character individuals, and I really don't think she gets the respect for her game that she deserves since her sophomore slump. I thought she got a love her first year, but I want to see her bounce back, and it would be cool to see the fairy tale line would be Kiki and Jaquez kind of, you know, just chilling that whole hype that's going on across town and really taking out Juju and those girls.
Well, with Charisma Osborne moving on, we obviously, there's kind of a big hole and gap, right, in that leadership type of position. Charisma obviously has been there for 5 years. She naturally kind of fit into that role. can Kiki now step up and be the alpha of the team? Can she really be that vocal leader to lead this team to, you know, a Final Four and beyond? I hope she can step up and do that. You know, her and Lauren Betts feel like the natural fits to really take it to the next level and take this team, you know, really far in March. But yeah, obviously there's still a lot of time till the season starts. We still are still working away in the transfer portal there. So it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, there's a big opportunity for Kiki, obviously.
Yeah. And so, yeah, women's team is recruiting. And then moving on to other sports as we wrap up.
Spring. Lots going on.
Softball went 2-1 against Arizona. They had a crazy comeback on Sunday where they were down 0-7 and ended up just going on an 11-run run. Is it 11-run run? Is that how you say it? 11-run run.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. And then they also played CSUN, which was a little cupcake today. A little primer for their, you know, their finale of the season there on the road against Arizona State. They just had the senior day against Arizona. But, yeah, things are gearing up. I like where this softball team is trending. I think they're playing much better than they have at the beginning of the season. I don't know if it was a cancellation against Cal that took them to just reset before their series with Stanford. There was a weather cancellation, by the way. It wasn't Cal chickening out, which we know is possible because it's Cal. But, yeah, I'm excited to see how this team can make some noise in the postseason, which doesn't come up to next week, so we'll continue talking about it. But they're wrapping up the season this weekend, so shout out to the women. They're playing much better. And they seem to be getting back to that form we know them to be.
They're definitely in a groove. And then men's volleyball today started their NCAA campaign. So they were in the quarterfinal. And they beat number 8 seed Fort Valley State. I have no idea where that school is, by the way. But, yeah, they swept them 3-0. And they will move on to the semifinal. Do you know when that next match is? I don't know.
Fort Valley is in Georgia, by the way, for anyone who likes trivia and wants to add that to your Tuesday trivia.
Good to know.
Who are they facing now?
Irvine or Penn State, I believe, depending on who wins tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
And the game will be, or the match will be on May 2nd. I just looked it up at 3:30. Live broadcast on NCAA.com.
Hey, shout out to NCAA. Much better than the Pac-12 network, I'll tell you that.
I was waiting for that.
They're not. I'm going to piss on their grave. They're not. It's going to be 10 years from now. I will mention how bad that network is. And then men's polo, water polo team, also killing it. They won the MSFP championship this past week. And the NCAA championship starts their number one seed because they are the number one team. I'm excited to see them play well because I remember their stinker in the final last year, and I believe it was against Cal. It was and that was tough to watch because they almost made a comeback, but it just didn't work out. But I'm excited to see how they play this year and see if they can pull it through. Number one seed. The NCAA tournament starts off next week. We don't know their opponent yet because they're on a bye. That's what number one seeds do. They go bye. And then, yeah, so shout out to them as well for killing it. Seems like we have some good prospects for winning a championship between these two, the two men volleyball and water polo, bringing some.
Yeah, good. And the third team that kind of starts their postseason campaign is women's tennis. So they're a number 8 seed, and they'll be playing number 62 San Diego State on Friday at 1 p.m. So curious to see how they do. They were hot for the last couple of months. Like they were killing teams. I think they lost their final match in Ojai against Cal. But, you know, obviously very talented, good team there. So, you know, I think they have an outside chance that they could potentially be bringing some hardware back back to Westwood there. But yeah, there's a lot of sports going on in the spring. Obviously, I don't want to talk about baseball because they've been god awful. we can talk about that season after wraps up. But, yeah. Anything else? Did we miss anything? I'm sure there's something we missed.
Yeah, we'll cover it next time, or just never cover it. And hope. Oh, you one big thing. Congrats to Latu. I mentioned him in passing, but he is gone 15th in the draft, first round. Looks sharp. He had Martin Jarman and the whole gang there. I don't know why I said Martin Jarman of all people, but Deshaun Foster.
He never misses a photo op.
No, he doesn't. Mar Jarman, Deshaun Foster, Jay Toa, and there was someone else that I'm missing. Oh, and Malo. So those were all in the picture that I saw. And it's great to see, you know, he was awesome and get to see him in Detroit at the draft. And representing first defensive player in the draft taken. It was a very weird draft to say at that. So he was a 15th pick. But I'm looking forward to him just pass rushing, especially in that AFC South and getting after those guys, because I think he's going to be a beast. And I'm excited for him to really play out and make Indianapolis happy. And then the fourth round, we had Darius Masau. He's coming to New York. Welcome to New York. Welcome to the Big Apple. And so I'm excited to see him. I think he's extremely hyped. Obviously, if you kept up with him, you know, his career at UCLA, he had a great year last year under Lynn. Before then, it was kind of spotty as he got adjusted from the leap up from the group of five. But I think I'm excited to see him in a professional setting, because some guys are even better in the pros than they were at UCLA or and whatnot. And that's what tends to be the trend with our linebackers due to things that we don't have to talk about. But so, yeah, welcome to New York. I'm glad we had two players drafted. The edge, the Murphy twins, you know, unfortunately did not get drafted. And some of us can gripe and say that they should have returned. But I think it was time for them. I mean, it would have helped for them to return. But I don't know if they necessarily would have been, in my personal opinion, as effective as they were with Carl Jones and Latu on the other side. So it's not
they were signed as free agents, though.
Yeah, one of them, I think Gabriel went to the Vikings and Grayson went not to Commanders somewhere. Well, regardless, they're in the NFL on a team, so they can work their way up to try to hopefully, because they were great Bruins as much as we got frustrated with certain things. Yeah. So
Carl Jones, Lions, I believe, undrafted free agent there.
Oh, what a hell of a team to go to. And I'm excited for him to hopefully wreck ASB on practice. So, yeah.
And I think Colson Yankoff got signed by the Commanders as well.
That's so who went to the him. Yeah. He can. Yeah. I hope he That's turns out. Confusing. Yeah, I want him to be like the next Taysom Hill. That's my hope. So
I heard that that the Commanders are going to run him as a punt and kick returner as well.
There we go. Look, Chip had some things right, I guess. Huh?
No, I just made that up.
I thought Dan Quinn had made a call. Was like, hey, I didn't hire you, but what do you think about this guy? Anyways, yeah. Before we kind of stray into that zone, we're going to hop off. And Zed, do you want to do your little spiel that you're good at this point?
My spiel, begging people to please share the show. Yeah, I can do it. You know where to find us at this point. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. Find us on Twitter, on X, whatever it's called. Retweet our stuff. Share with your friends. And lastly, we're on thecollegehuddle.com. Again, a lot of cool stuff going on there. Our show gets posted there as well. But you can find other schools, other fans of schools and their podcast. Would highly encourage you guys to go visit that site, get familiar with some of the Big Ten teams, and you'll see us on some of their shows from time to time. We'll be doing some live stuff with the College Huddle and some of the other shows there, so a lot of cool stuff going on there. And yeah, that's all we have today. As always, go Bruins.
Go Bruins.